Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I really hope that we can really be friends for this next hour and just talk as friends, just battle this idea about people, young people not being in the churches, leaving the churches, not liking the churches, and just look what is in our power, because some things are just in a spirit and for God to solve, but some are on our table to solve. And I believe there are a few things that when we change them or try to battle them, we can really make significant change. Okay? So first thing that as we are talking about this is how on earth we can agree on these things when we are coming from such different countries, different contexts, different cultures. Is there anything like we can agree on? So I was thinking like, I'm going to tell you a few things that work in Slovakia, but how can I be sure it's going to work in Bulgaria or England or Poland or even States? Like, is it even possible? But then one thing that came to my mind is the thing I really hate, but it might be really beneficial and good for us in this moment, and that's globalization. And because the age we live in right now, we are probably struggling, and young people are probably struggling with almost the same things. They are listening to the same song in the same time all over the world. They dance to the same crazy moves all around the world. They enjoy the same movie, the same week, or even the same hour in whole world. And that makes young people to be kind of close and similar, but on the other side, further away than any other time before in the history. So we are living in really paradox age, but how amazing it is that Christ is the same. He was the same yesterday, he's the same today, he's going to be the same tomorrow. So when we focus on him and his personality and who he is, we can solve and just crack some of these issues. So before we move forward, I would like you to answer one question. If you can just pair up and just turn to each other and try to answer first question. And the first question will be probably easier one, and that's, what do you believe about the church? What do you know necessarily about the church, but what is your strong belief in your heart that this is the church, or this should be truth about the church? Okay, we have to define it for ourselves before we move to other people. Before we move to young people, we have to ask ourselves, really, what do we believe about the church? Because if there is a chance that there is something in our heart that is not resolved, if there is a bitterness in our heart toward the church, or disappointment, or anger, or we already gave up on the church because of everything that happened to us, and it usually happens to people who really care and really serve in the church and are in ministry. If there is something like that, we won't move forward. And if there's bitterness in my heart, all young people around me will feel it, and it will just spread as a poison to other people. And I wanted to tell you about my church, because I think I'll let you to discern and to judge that. But I'm coming from Slovakia, from Lutheran church that is 500 years old. We have full liturgy in our church. We have organ, we have pews, and we have preachings that are like usually almost 1.5 hour, yeah, like long, solid. And there is absolutely like no single kind of like cool stuff for young people. No guitars, nothing. Nothing you could just grab on and just use it somehow, okay? So it's probably the most extreme. So I want to just to persuade you. So if it can work in my environment, there's no excuse. Like it has to work everywhere else, okay? Because I believe it just goes better and better from the place, okay? But I love my church. I am a big fan of it. I don't mind organ. I don't mind liturgy. I'm all for it. There are a few other things I think that are more important to change, not necessarily form. And that might be a surprising thought, that I think young people, and I think it's pretty brave to say, But I really don't believe we should change the form in order to get young people into church. I think we should change something else. And I've been blessed enough that it's working in our church, that actually our church is full of young people every Sunday. And they go there with their grandmas and they sing these old hymns with the organ and they don't mind. They love being there. So there has to be something else. Form sometimes helps. I don't want to say that, oh, you know what, burn your guitars and drums because, you know, it's you. No, it's great. When you are already on that stage, I bless you. That's amazing. But if you are not, don't be discouraged. I don't think form is the main thing we should change in order for young people to come to church. I have other question, though. So again, you will talk to your partners. And the question is, what do you believe about young people? What do you believe about young people? What are your beliefs about who young people are? I know that's a harder one. That's it was the second one. Try to express your heart. Like, what do you really believe about young people, about this generation, people who are 14, 15, 16, 17? It's pretty crucial for us to define that, okay? So overall, what I'm hearing from you is that you are a very gracious group. You chose very gracious words to describe this generation. I've written some others that I've heard with some other groups that were not so gracious. So some of them were spoiled. You can just knock your, like, you can just express on your faces if you agree or not, okay? So spoiled. Okay, we have more critical wing here. Okay, bored. They're bored all the time. Not interested in anything, which would be the opposite to Czech Republic, probably. Demanding, entitled, and how to say the word nicer than I wrote it. Intellectually challenged. Okay, maybe you agree, maybe don't, but some other people, they were probably more frustrated group than you are. You still have hope, you still have vision for that generation, which is great. But some of these words actually are true as well. But the question is, where actually is the source of the things we are saying? Because sometimes we believe something, sometimes we think we know, but how for sure can we say that we have the right understanding of where these people are? And it was our question in our country. And now I would like to show you something that somebody actually did a PhD in that research. And then he was trying, his name is Steve Petty. If you know Dave Petty, it's his brother. And he did like all study in it. And then he was teaching it us for a week. And now I'm going to give you a 3-minute version of that, okay? Because it's a little bit detouring, but I think it's a really good tool you can even use when you talk to people. It's called the heart triangle. And basically theory behind it is that how we can actually know. How we can actually know that what we believe about somebody or something is true. So the point is that we are sometimes feeling something or witnessing something, and we go around that, but how we can actually go right to the core, right to the heart of young people and really know what they think and really know what is happening. And so basically we know that we always function in like these three parts, to do, to know, and to feel. It's like really friendly psychology here, but you know what I'm trying to say. Like, we are actually connected with these three parts, like our feelings, our soul, but also our mind, our knowledge, and also action, what we are doing with that, what we know. And sometimes we ask questions, people outside of the heart triangle, outside of like really core, gather some data, some information about what people do, how they spend their time, about what they know about Jesus, for example, and we judge them or we believe something about them. I'm trying to avoid the word judge because it's pretty strong, but you know what I mean, about what they know about Bible, what they know about Jesus, and feel, you know, whether we are now, the generation now is all about feel, about feelings, about emotions, about their intuition about something. But what Steve was teaching us was that that we can actually go deeper, that we can go within the triangle and try to ask questions in a different way, not to ask about what they do, but ask, become questions. How we can actually go deeper and ask questions that are aiming to the source, to the core of who they are becoming, like what is happening deeper than only what they are doing. Then instead of knowing, ask questions about beliefs and believing. That was why I was trying to word my questions, not about like what do you know about the church, but what do you believe? What is our belief system without just our knowledge? And feel, instead of to feel, is to love. And what is actually that really, really matters? What is their value system? What is what they actually is really in their really core, in their very core? And so we actually did research. We designed questions that would go from outside and ask feel no do questions, but then try to engage also questions of love and become and believe and trying to get closer and closer and closer to their core. It took us months. It took us months to design questions. And then it took us almost a year to go out and ask young people those questions. Our question was what is the nature of emerging generation? Who really are these people? What they really need? What they really think? And we had around 500 people we talked to, but it wasn't like interview for 3 minutes. It was, every interview was 2 hours, and we were trying to work with these questions. And it took, and then we spent like days to just examine what we've heard from them. And we came to some conclusions, and I would like to share, cut you the time so you don't have to go through all that process, and just give you some nuggets of gold that we found as we talked to these people. And I believe when we know those things, it can really help us to change some things, not actually how whole church will change, because is there some pastor here? Can I ask some pastors? Oh, okay, some of you. Okay, so maybe you can do even more, but for all of us, we can change something. We can change our church because we are the church. And when we change something, we can make this place to be welcoming and open for young people, and they will love to be there. Even with all the other traditions or drama or whatever is happening, you know, and sinfulness and brokenness we are living and our churches are about sometimes. But something can really change. I really believe that. So, few thoughts. Actually, I'm not promoting this book because actually you cannot even buy it. But I think most of this you can download online and find, because we did research maybe even in your country. Let me tell you. Slovenia, Poland, Slovakia, Ukraine, Estonia, Czech Republic. These were the countries that asked similar questions than us, and we were trying to put it together and see like how we can learn from that. So, few ideas what we learn. You have it also in your outlines. Now we are in a point three, point B, yeah. It was actually, it's Josiah Venture, it's organization, because we, as groups of authors, work on it, maybe around 50 people. 50 people worked on it. So it's Josiah Venture, Dive Deep Project. And it's, I think it's in the end of your notes. It should be recommended reading. Yeah. Okay, so for, one of the things we figured out was that paradigm of authorities absolutely changed. That, you know, when we did something wrong and our parents would come to the parent-teacher conferences and teachers would say something about us, we would get spanked, or we would be like, what did you do in school? Like, how can you behave this way? These days, it really doesn't matter. Whatever teacher says, whatever parent says to the kids, like, they really don't care. Their whole paradigm of authority that is very natural for us, our generations, our generations is different people, but even for me, like, I had huge, like, respect for my teachers and for my pastor and for my parents. It's not the case anymore. And, well, we can, I'm not necessarily telling it's right, I think almost that it's wrong, but it is reality and we have to deal with it. And so if you want to think about authorities, you have to know that their friends are the authorities. Whatever the group of their friends say, they take it like, okay, that's the course I'm going to go. It makes sense. And parents cannot agree. And teachers, it really, really doesn't matter what they think anymore. So basically, if we want to win over people, You have to find, I apologize for this word, it's really terrible, but that's the times we live in. It's trendsetter. Trendsetters in the groups. If you find the right people who are trendsetters for the groups, if you find the right friend, you can, with this one person, you can win 10 another people or 20 another people. Because there are these authorities within groups of young people who say, I think this is cool. And everybody would start to wear the same t-shirt because it's cool. It's hip, it's trendy. And so once it happened in our camp, and I even don't know who the trendsetter was in that group, but we had like 19 non-believers in the camp, and we had maybe 20 or 30 believers. And some of the believers like won really strong position in like second or third or fourth day at the camp. And they started to say to these people, like, I'm part of the small group, to non-believers. Like, they were absolutely unchurched kids. But they were like, so I am in Maruška's small group, I am in Denisa's small group, I am in Peter's small group. And so the small group, nobody knew what it was, but it was super cool to be part of it. So then at the end of the camp, some people got saved, some people didn't, but 95% of the people came and they wanted to sign up for small groups. Like, I don't know what discipleship means, but can I sign up for that? Because it was super cool to be part of the small group. And these people don't get, like, they didn't understand anything. They even didn't trust Christ, but they wanted to be discipled because somebody said it was, they had it and they wanted to have the same thing. So basically, when you find these trendsetters and then you invest into them and you invest your knowledge, your love for church into them and your vision for church into them and you explain that Jesus Christ established it and Jesus Christ is the head and it belongs to Jesus Christ and can be messy, it can be ruined, it can be bad, but it belongs to Jesus Christ and that's how we have to love it because it's the bride of Christ. If you pass it to the trendsetters, you can be sure you'll get tens and tens and tens young people to your church. So that's what I'm doing, basically. There's this girl called Anička, and I went through a 4-week study with her, going through every picture that is in the Bible. Like we said, the church is body of Christ. It's bride of Christ. It's ecclesia. It's something that should be missional and go outside. So I went through all the pictures with her, and she got to understand. She was like, that's true. Like, that's really true. I really do believe it. It's great. And so she went outside. In maybe 3 weeks, we had 20 new people in the church. She just got to understand. She went outside. She asked everybody to go to church with her on Sunday. She's like, oh, let's go with me. And they came to this traditional church that nobody even noticed that they were there. And nobody was super warm or welcoming, but Anička was there, and so they came with her, and they were coming when she was coming to church, and they stayed in the church, actually. So I know that it's not a super theological term, but what I'm saying is that with this generation it works. So we have to understand that paradigm of authority is absolutely changed. Another really interesting thing we found out is that... it's something what you already said. So our finding was we were trying to look for how young people are receiving love and when they feel loved. And we found out that love, that for them it equals belonging. And belonging means inclusion. Like if they feel included in some way, they feel that they belong and then they feel super loved and they want to stay with people who love them. So another thing what we can do in our churches is to find ways how we can include people, but not when they come and they prove that they are worthy and faithful after 17 years being in a church, you know, but second or third week when they come, ask them to do something, ask them to clean, ask them to pass papers to people as they, bulletins when they come inside. Second or third week, I know it's a risky business because they can mess up and they probably will. But some of them can really, for the first time maybe in their life, can feel that they belong and somebody trusts them and they're included and they want to be, they so desperately want to belong somewhere and want to feel loved and they feel loved by that when you include them. So you can just try to think about little things, but not wait a year. If you wait a year, it's too late. You have to use the momentum. Another finding we found is, we called it, that it's the generation here and now. Generation here and now. Because these people, it's like when you're talking about future and about decades, or, you know, like as we are older and we believe that we have to be faithful for our life and we have like plan in our mind for like next 20 or 30 years, they don't even get the concept of 30 years. Everything is happening now and here. And you can see that like 1 week is something super cool and they'll watch it, all of them watch the same video, but the next day nobody cares anymore. Like they are living in the moment, and when they catch the moment, something can really happen. And I know probably you are from the same, from the similar church as mine, is that you have to prove the faith. You have to prove that you are worthy. You have to prove yourself that we can trust you and that you can belong then. But this generation, we will lose them. So when you see that something is happening, you cannot miss the moment. I would like to tell you the story of my sister. 8 years ago, her first daughter was born. Her name is Mishka. My sister's name is Sylvia. And so Sylvia and her husband brought Mishka home. And they brought her from the hospital, and they put her on a bed, and they looked at each other, and they totally panicked. They were like, Sylvia, what were we thinking? Like, what are we going to do? We have a baby. Like, she was like, I don't know. Like, you tell me. They were like scared to death. So finally they said like, okay, let's just come up with some plan. Let's just keep it alive for 2 weeks, and then we will see what happens next. We will see how we will continue from there. Let's just keep it alive. That's first thing. And when she was telling me the story, like, we really laughed, and I really loved it. Mishka is 8. She survived, so everything was fine. The plan worked. But there is such a great picture of our spiritual babies in that. Sometimes we do camps and the outreach ministries, and we help people who trust Christ, and maybe even they come to church once. But when we expect baby to be fed once a week, and then we keep it in a closet for next week, and then on Sunday we take it out and feed it again. And I don't have children, but I know that about parenting. It's not a good idea, for sure. Like, it won't work. And so, next days, next hours after spiritual babies born are crucial. If they find their parents, if they found shepherds, if they found people who really and honestly and genuinely care about them, and they pursue them, and they feed them, and they care every day for them, for next weeks, next months, next years, I assure you they will stay in church, whatever church you are in. You don't have to solve big structure things or big vision things. Just if you are going to be the person that is willing to feed the spiritual baby, or you make sure that you have enough people like that, these people will stay in your church, for sure. Because another thing we found out, and it's in your outline too, is that they're just one click away from everything. Also negative things, but also the best preachers in the world. If they want, they can listen to Andy Stanley every week, and they probably do, most of them. Or John Piper, or whoever you have in mind. They just click on it, and they just listen to the best sermons. So we have to think the church for them is not necessarily the source of teaching. They don't need it. They can listen. I know that it can be pretty hard to listen to, but I have to go through all of that by myself, and I was kind of like, what? Like, really? But I'm living the reality, and I know that it's true. They don't need teachers. They need shepherds. They desperately need shepherds. Because they can have the best possible teachers. They can download their teachings, and, you know, you can help them to navigate what is good teaching and what is bad. They need you for that, for sure, to help them discern. But then they don't necessarily need you to teach them. They really need you to love them. They really need you to shepherd them. And every single person in the world needs a shepherd. And you cannot download the shepherd. And the shepherd is not one click away. It's hard work. And that's why there are not a lot of good shepherds in the world, because it's hard work. It takes a lot of time. Sometimes fruit is invisible and minimum, and people disappoint you, throw your heart to the garbage, don't care, leave, betray, have crisis. It's not easy. But I honestly, with all my heart, believe this is only one way to go, to really shepherd young people, to do it the way Jesus did with his disciples, and just pick few people, or maybe just one person, and invest everything we have into them, as Jesus did, and be with them every day if necessary, feed them every day if necessary, because it is what it takes. But that was basically the main idea I had for today. I have a few more, but I don't want you to miss this one. People don't need teachers necessarily, they need shepherds. They really, every single person you meet need shepherd. So once we learned that, we started to do some changes in our ministries. And for example, we used to do a lot of theater ministry. I don't know if you know what it means, but it's kind of stage ministry. People come, just what is happening now. People come and sit and they listen and then they leave. Many churches are designed this way. Also, many ministries are designed this way. we still do English camps, but it was designed just the same way, that people would come and there would be evening program and the gospel would be presented from upstage and people would get it or they wouldn't get it. And we tried to do follow-up and we tried to get people from the camp then to the church, but it was so hard and we had minimum people really coming to church and staying in the church. And then we started to do something called fusion. Have you ever heard about fusion ministries? It's a music ministry, and basically they do it other way around. They start throughout the year, and they ask kids to come and play instruments. It's a terrible noise. Sometimes you cannot even call it music ministry. It's terrible. But kids love it, and they come every week. They learn how to play or how to sing or how to dance, and these leaders would spend time with them and ask them questions and always share something from the Bible and then share Christ. And but at the end of the year, they finished with the camp. So all the kids who came throughout the year, they finished with the camp, but it's like a family being together on vacation. And we found out that these people actually are joining the church and staying there because they are doing something. It's not a stage ministry, but it's involving ministry. People are absolutely there doing something. It can be sports, it can be music, it can be anything you can think of. It really doesn't matter what tool you use, but we have to involve people in order for them to stay in church. So the fruit in our ministries was I don't know if doubled or tripled, but it was so increased when we started to involve people in everything what we are doing. Okay, and another thing is we have to love people. We said some of the stories already, but if it's only our love, you know, because we love young people, we love hanging out with them, it's not what's going to transform their life forever. It has to be Christ-centered love. And I have one picture that is my really favorite. So I'll use Anička because I told you about her. Okay. Here's Anička, and here is Christ. And many times in our churches, we expect that this 15-year-old Anička will come to church, and she'll go to Christ. And when she has a problem, she'll ask Christ. And she will decode Christ's love, because it's the biggest love. And she will read her Bible, and she will understand Christ. And it should work this way. Why it shouldn't? I don't know how it was in your life, but I assure you that young people need one stage in between, and that's probably you. I'm sorry to tell you that, but it is probably you. So I'll write my name here because Anička is mine. Well, not now, she's Christ now, but she used to be mine. And it was part of like hard work that she had a problem, she came, she asked, and I pointed her to Christ. She was reading her Bible, she didn't get anything, she came, because of course she started with Revelation. I don't know what this kind of trend of people start reading the Bible and they read Revelation. And then she heard about this and she didn't get it, so she came. And then she felt alone, so she came. And so first months it was really, really busy. But then after some months, I realized, actually, this is not a really good model. Like, it really has to go this way. But we have to get ready that it takes time. And as they mature in Christ, we are going to I'll use the word it's not decline, how do you say it? Like remove from us and point them to Christ. So one day, actually, they won't need us at all. They'll go to Christ and they'll ask Him and they'll seek Him and they'll read the Bible and they would want to know what He thinks, not what I think. But it takes time. In my experience, shortest process was 3 years. You might be better in that. It could maybe take 1 year for you. It also depends on the age of people. But it takes time. But it has to go through somebody. Because when we tell them Jesus loves them, it's so far away concept for them. They really need somebody to hug them and tell them face to face. And when they see it through your heart, then they will believe it. But they need somebody real in the first stages to understand that they are loved, to understand that they are accepted, to understand that they should grow, and you are willing to help them. And another challenge is, in my country at least, I don't know how is it in yours, but in my country, because we are post-communistic country, means that my parents were forbidden to go to church, especially because my mom was a teacher. She would be imprisoned if she would go to church on Sunday, because she was a state employee, so she couldn't go to church. She went anyway, because we are living in the eastern part of Slovakia. It was a very strong underground church there. So she went, but it was in secret, and it was hidden, and it was very complicated. But she started to go very much later. But my parents were atheistic, basically, as I was growing up. And the same way, it's still with many, many teenagers in my country. Like, their parents are lost generation. They absolutely don't care about the church. Like, communism killed them spiritually. And so, basically, my girls, now I'm discipling a new group of girls. They are 20-year-olds. And I am the oldest Christian they know. I'm 32. And they think that's, the Christian they see always in the church, but nobody would talk to them, you know, of those people. So they don't really know what kind of Christians they are. So I'm the oldest Christian they know. And so they follow me, so they see like, okay, I know how dating should look like, I know how engagement should look like, and starting of the marriage, but I'm there. They don't know about the rest. They don't know how to grow kids and teenagers, and I'm willing to model it for them. But sometimes I'm so sad. Like, where are all these people who could just open their homes for these kids to see healthy families, healthy marriages, healthy grandparents, healthy parents? Like, where are these people? And I'm trying, but I have only one home and only one husband. And so we have permanently 20, 30, 40 people in our house, which is fine. But there is like 100,000 people in my city. And I'm sad. I'm sad because I don't see that happening. And I believe if just us people in this room, if we would really open our homes for young people, it would be significant change on this continent. I really believe that. And that's what Jesus did. And that's how we can get people to church. I really believe that. And we can also then work with guitars and drum kits and, you know, have extra, I don't know, curriculum or extra youth pastor in the church. But that's all extra things. Good things, but not the things we should change this first. We first should be ready to die for these people, to parent them when they are 1 week old, to include them, to love them, to open our homes for them, to save a seat next to you in a church for them. You wouldn't believe how huge thing it is for young people when they around, they are there for the first time, they don't know where to go, and you wave them like, I saved you a seat, you can sit next to me. And when something like people are sitting and standing as in my church, you just try to explain what is happening to them. It means the world for them that you saved the seat next to you to them. And we wouldn't even, sometimes in our, as we grow and in our philosophical or theological minds, we wouldn't even think about saving seat for somebody. But in that age, it's probably the best theological thing you could do, is to just save seat in a church next to you so they would have somebody. And they would have somebody to talk to when the service is done. So, the last thing I tried to cover there was also to speak the truth. Just because sometimes when we try to be extra nice to people, we avoid the truth. And we try to love them, but I had to learn the hard way that loving people, you cannot love people without the truth, without telling them the truth. You have to help them, and that's part of shepherding. Sometimes, of course, it's part of the teaching, but it's part of shepherding is just to tell them, like, you cannot sleep with your boyfriend. It's a very unpopular thing to say. Or you maybe could think a little bit more before you dress, and not only to church, but basically. You know, and there are just few things that kind of you have to just lead them and tell them, because you love them by telling them. But so I wrote there two things. Discernment is just to really try to pray and ask Spirit to help you discern what is happening. Because a few times it happened to me that I just thought they were spoiled. And so I said something. And then the story was revealed behind what happened, and I realized I was absolutely wrong. And it was a big hurting story behind it. It wasn't spoilness, or it was something totally else. So before we open our mouth, we have to be sure that we ask the Spirit and try to discern and really understand what's going on in their lives. And then my friend, she has this theory. I called it like a snow theory. And she says, like, when you go outside and it's raining, people would stay out of the rain and wait until it finishes, or they would open their umbrellas and try to walk very quickly through the rain. But then, when you are living in a country where it snows, and when it's the first snow, everybody's like, oh, it's beautiful, and they would go outside and they would try to, catch the snowflakes. It's the same water. But people are not hiding anymore. They enjoy it. And my friend, she really believes that it's kind of with the words as well and with the truth as well. We can say the truth the way that people are trying to stay out of it and don't listen and close the door and won't go outside because it's raining, or open their umbrella and run and you're done. And you told the truth, but it absolutely didn't change anything. Or you can say the truth the way that it's snowing and people are like, thank you for telling me that. Like, this is great. Like, thank you. I really appreciate you told me that. I don't know how many people reacted to you or to me this way, but it's a very important skill to learn as we are working with people, especially young people, to say the truth like it would be snowing, like it would be raining, because it's part of loving them and part of shepherding them.